cool things we can do, we can do, we can do. We love the cool things we can do on our computer.
When you need to talk technology, no one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
Well, goodness sakes, it's that time again. Time to talk today's top and trending technology topics on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Good morning, Adam Lepp here. Thanking you for listening. We get together every Tuesday and Thursday between approximately 9:13 a.m. and 10 here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial and broadcasting online over the great thing that we call the internet at WWGH1071.com. On the docket today, we will discuss the thoughts, positive and negative, on the Snapchat update. If you're a Snapchat user, you are aware that, probably aware, that they've made some changes, and not everybody is exactly jumping up and down about these so-called upgrades, or perhaps adjustments. One reason is that Snapchat is looking to make some more advertising dollars, and like many things, the almighty dollar rears its head. Whether or not it's an attractive head is a different matter. Also be discussing some research that the very smart people over at MIT are doing into learning how the human brain functions. So stay tuned. Great topics for you. Stimulate a few brain cells and stimulate some conversation. If you have a suggested topic for the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, or you have a question, comment, suggestion, complaint, brother insight, I'd love to hear from you. If you don't agree with an opinion that I provide, that's fine. I love to debate, and your opinions are valuable. We welcome all viewpoints. Send me an email, adam@wwgh1071.com. Well, Amazon, they're always in the news, and sometimes they and their top dog, Jeff Bezos, can be controversial for good or for bad. Well, according to CNN and a source that they have interacted with, they are laying off hundreds of employees. The majority of the layoffs are affecting their Seattle headquarters, but some global teams may be affected as well. The process of notifying employees has already started, according to this source. The affected departments are more mature areas of Amazon's business, like its online retail operations. In a statement sent to CNN, Amazon confirmed the layoffs. The statement said, as part of our annual planning process, we are making headcount adjustments. That's a new word for layoffs. Headcount adjustments. Got to remember that one. Across the company, small reductions in a couple of places and aggressive hiring in many others. For affected employees, we work to find roles in the areas where we are hiring. It appears Amazon is not looking to reduce its overall headcount. Now, there are currently 3,900 open corporate job listings in Seattle and 12,000 open positions worldwide, which point to Amazon's aggressive hiring plans. You know, over 15,000 people needed. Amazon said it added 130,000 jobs in the past year, which does not include its $13.7 billion acquisition of Whole Foods. At the end of last year, Amazon employed over a million people, over half a million people worldwide. Now, this news, first reported yesterday by the Seattle Times, comes at a time when Amazon is publicly searching for a location to build its second headquarters. HQ2 will cost a minimum of $5 billion to construct and operate and will create as many as 50,000 jobs. Amazon reported a profit of nearly $2 billion in its latest quarter from the holiday shopping season. The results were the largest in its history, and the first time that it topped $1 billion in a quarter. And their CEO, again, Jeff Bezos, touted the success of its voice assistant software, Alexa. He said, "We don't see positive surprises of this magnitude very often. Expect us to double down." So some news from Amazon, some layoffs, but also hiring a large number of people. Their second headquarters coming at some time in the near future. And related updates. Adam Lepp here, thanking you for listening. Don't forget that coming up after this show, in approximately 55 minutes or so, it is a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Dr. Ronald Fineman from Florida joins me to talk about current events. The first topic we will address will be Scott Spears and his interview with very controversial political candidate Art Jones, a gentleman who denies the Holocaust, who is thought of as being a member of the Nazi Party. Scott Spears spoke with him yesterday. Interesting interview. The guy is very passionate. Although we certainly don't agree with what he has to say, he is not shy about disseminating that opinion. And, of course, our very own Scott Spears, not one to shy away from controversy or guests with opinions not consistent with ours and most people's, spoke with him. If you missed the interview, please go to our website at WWGH1071.com and listen to it on demand. And Dr. Fineman and I will be discussing the interview later in the morning, next hour, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. We'll also be talking about some presidential polls, past and present presidents, and how do they stack up? What is Donald Trump's popularity versus the popularity of other of recent presidents, Jimmy Carter, both George Bush's, etc.? That'll certainly be interesting. As you know, Dr. Fineman is one of the world's finest presidential scholars, so don't want to miss that. Adam Lepp here, thanking you for listening to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Visit my website. Find out more about me, adamthecomputerguy.com. As you know, especially if you're a regular listener to this show, you're aware that we have smart cars and smartphones, but probably not enough smart people. But I believe nothing really can compare to the capacity and creativity and robustness of the human brain. And now scientists over in Massachusetts, some very smart people at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, they've launched the MIT Intelligence Quest, maybe to an extent turning away from smartphones and smart cars and smart technology and focusing on the old-fashioned human brain. They're trying to find out how human intelligence works and get a deeper grasp of human intelligence, how it can be applied to building wiser and more useful machines. So, in a general sense, the human will breathe on the smartphone or smart car or Internet of Things device, smart home, etc. Name an inanimate smart device, and we're trying to transfer people's intelligence over to those gadgets. Of course, we kind of do that anyway, but sometimes we lose touch of what exactly the main objective is. And by getting a better idea of how human intelligence works from A to B, these smart people over in Massachusetts are looking to make the whole process understood better and make technology work the best that it can. Collaborators in this effort include life scientists, computer scientists, social scientists, and engineers. Michael Jude from Straightcast, Frost and Sullivan, very smart dude. Yes. Michael Jude, smart dude, we quote often. He said, "Human intelligence is turning out to be very complex, involving emergent properties that arise from complex computational networks. It's not simply an engineering design problem. Bringing in some of the soft sciences like psychology and sociology, as well as areas like medicine, quote, would seem to be a good thing. So looking at how intelligence functions from the perspective of many different and very smart scientists and how that can be applied to making technology work better. You'd kind of think we were doing that anyway, but these people are delving deeper into that. And I think in the end, not only will it be interesting, but it could be quite revolutionary in devices. Who knows how smart the next smartphone could be or what a smart car could do? Guess we'll find out. L. Raphael Reif is the president of MIT. Some of the advances, he said, may be foundational in nature, involving new insights into human intelligence and new methods to let machines learn effectively. Others may be practical tools for use in a variety of research fields like disease diagnosis, drug discovery, automated soft system materials, and manufacturing design, as well as biology and finance. So we could use this research, again, seeing how human intelligence works, and apply it to medicine and to pharmacology. So the MIT Intelligence Quest, known as MIT IQ, that is a good abbreviation. Anyway, these researchers also will investigate the societal and ethical implications of advanced analytical and predictive tools. That's quite deep. But of course, at MIT, pretty smart people. They already have active groups and projects investigating autonomous systems, as well as media and information quality, labor markets and work of the future, innovation and the digital economy, and the role of artificial intelligence in the legal system. So how does artificial intelligence work in the courts and for an attorney? That really gets quite interesting. Doug Henschen, principal analyst at Constellation Research, said the challenge of better understanding human intelligence is enormous and requires a multidisciplinary approach. And MIT is using scientists, professors from many different fields, even we call the soft sciences like sociology and psychology. Doug Henschen, again, from Constellation Research, said MIT certainly has the stature, breadth, and depth to take this on, drawing on credible and well-known experts. Two linked entities within MIT's Intelligence Quest will lead this work. The Core is one of them. It will advance the science and engineering of both human and machine intelligence, and a big output that they hope to acquire will be machine learning algorithms. The other entity is the Bridge. It'll focus on the application of MIT discoveries in natural and artificial intelligence to all fields. It'll host state-of-the-art tools from industry and research labs around the world. The Bridge will provide the MIT community with the intelligence technologies, platforms and infrastructure, education about artificial intelligence tools for students, as well as faculty and staff, technical support, and specialized hardware. The MIT Intelligence Quest will connect and amplify existing excellence across labs and centers already engaged in intelligence research. It will establish shared spaces for group work and directly support research. MIT will establish additional entities within their intelligence quest in partnership with corporate and philanthropic organizations to fund the project. IBM may be one of those corporate organizations working with MIT on this intelligence quest. Again, seeing how human intelligence functions. We spend a lot of time on artificial intelligence, smart cars and smartphones, etc. Let's take a look and see what makes the human brain tick. Let's see how smart people function. John Kelly is from IBM. He's a senior vice president over there. He said, IBM is proud to be a cornerstone of this expanded initiative. Rebecca Wedeman from Nucleus Research said, MIT's Intelligence Quest is a natural evolution of what MIT and MIT Labs have been doing in the fields of artificial intelligence, deep learning, and work. She said similar announcements from other higher education and research centers can be expected. So, what are the ethical concerns? That always comes up when you study things like this. Human intelligence, how does it function? Is that ethical? Well, three names that you're probably familiar with, Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and Stephen Hawking, have expressed concerns about the ethical and societal implications of artificial intelligence research. They launched Open.ai 3 years ago, an effort to guide ethical artificial intelligence development to benefit society. Microsoft, Google, IBM, and Amazon are among the high-tech firms that launched partnership on artificial intelligence in 2 years ago with similar goals. Again, what are the ethical implications of this? Michael Jude said, what if we had done the same thing with automobiles? What we actually have built any? Sometimes you just have to make tracks and fire out the solutions to problems along the way. So some deep stuff, ethical implications, studying how the human brain works, how it effects related to, etc., artificial intelligence. And in 2018, that stuff's kind of important. We have devices that are smart, but how about smart people? And how does a smart device compare to a smart person? So we take a look at that stuff here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, a twice weekly feature here on The Talking Place. WWGH Radio. So if you're I would say most adults, you wear glasses or some kind of visual correction. We just talked about smart cars and smart homes and smartphones and smart, just fill the blank in because there are so many different devices. And we also talked about research over at MIT in the Boston area regarding how smart people's brains work, or maybe how brains of not-so-smart people work. Well, how about smart eyeglasses? Why not, right? Again, if you're like most adults, you wear glasses or some kind of visual correction from time to time or all the time. The very smart people over at Intel have designed a pair of smart glasses that won't make you look like a geek, which is really not terrible, because I'm a geek or a dork or a nerd, and I don't really mind looking that way because it kind of fits my personality. But these smart glasses take a different approach. They're called Vaunt. They're still in the prototype phase. They look like ordinary glasses, except for a faint red glimmer that occasionally appears on the right lens. And you might say, well, why does it have that faint red glimmer on the right lens? Well, information sent to these glasses appear to be displayed on a screen, but in reality is beamed to the retina of the wearer's eye. Dieter Bohn, he did a hands-on review that was recently published in The Verge. He said, the prototypes I wore in December also felt virtually indistinguishable from regular glasses. They come in several styles, work with prescriptions, and can be worn comfortably all day. Bluetooth is designed to work with a smartphone. Well, Bluetooth can also work with these glasses. And also the way a smartwatch would, or one of the wearable technology items that might monitor your blood pressure or glucose or some other yardstick of your health. A very low-powered laser, known as a VCSEL, shines a red monochrome image at about 400 by 150 pixels onto a holographic reflector on the right lens of the glasses. That image is sent to the back of the eyeball directly to the retina. Because the image is sent directly to the retina, it's always in focus, which is why the system works on both prescription and non-prescription glasses. Now, this Intel prototype did not have a microphone, according to, again, Dieter Bohn from The Verge, but he speculated that future models may have one that would enable them to interact with artificial intelligence software like Alexa, Google Assistant, or Siri from Apple. Intel will be launching an early access program for developers later this year, so they can start experimenting with things the glasses might be able to do. So again, smart glasses, why not? Again, we have smart cars and smart phones, smart homes, and just talked about smart people and how their brains work. Well, now we have smart eyeglasses, perhaps worn by a smart person. You never quite know. Now, while you may not stick out in a crowd wearing these Vaunt smart eyeglasses, you're not going to overwhelm anybody with their power either. Vaunt, according to Eric Abrazizi from ABI Research, is purposely stripped down hardware-wise. No camera, touchpad, or microphone. That means these are only going to serve the most simple applications, mainly around heads-up notifications, navigation, step-by-step instruction, or personal notifications. It's a pretty light touch device, according to Kristen Hannock from Parks Associates. She said it mostly allows users to see contextual information like notifications from phones, map directions, recipes, shopping lists, and such. So eyeglasses is giving you directions, notifications from your smart device, or even a recipe or shopping list. So not overly fancy-dancy, but certainly does more than your regular $29 eyeglasses that you might pick up at Walmart or another store that is convenient, or even something more expensive from your eye doctor. Augmented reality devices like Vaunt. Again, it's kind of what this is, taking a new twist on augmented reality, or they call AR. They've been used in settings like manufacturing, logistics, and healthcare. But a lot of these applications are being driven by more powerful devices. We've talked about the HoloLens from Microsoft and Google Glass. Talked about that a couple years ago on the show. Now, they have the ability to see what's directly in front of the user. But these Vaunt smart eyeglasses take that a different direction. They have some benefits that could attract enterprise interest. Enterprises will be interested in these thanks to the user-friendly form factor, better for worker safety and all-day use cases. Again, they can be used on prescription and non-prescription eyeglasses. They look like regular glasses, not like something from Star Trek or something else high-tech and mysterious, like the Google Glass or one of the holographic gadgets like the HoloLens from Microsoft. One of the most obvious uses that the experts think will be most popular would be step-by-step instructions, whether it be a recipe or driving directions. And that would make sense. Again, something quick and dirty that you can access through your eyeglasses. Now, this all is well and good, but attracting interest from the consumer may be tricky. Again, a hard sell. I think it's pretty cool, but what will other people think? Vaunt has not solved one of Google Glass's primary downfalls. Google Glass, those special high-tech glasses from Google, didn't really make much of a splash. And the experts feel it's because there weren't really a lot of things that the average consumer could do with them. They were cool, but would you really use them all the time? Now, with respect to the Vaunt smart eyeglasses, consumers will have to be sold on their value. But that sell, according to the experts, will be easier if the price is right. If it's priced similar to a premium smartwatch, then there will be some potential there. Gaming is another possibility, one area that's attracted consumer interest in virtual reality and augmented reality devices. But Vaunt is not likely to make much headway in that market. It's too simplistic for any visually intensive applications. So learn its limitations, recipes, driving directions, but not gaming. Another issue is power. The glasses don't have cameras or a lot of processing ability or the ability to display data in any color besides red. Something like Pokemon Go may work on them, but developers will have to sacrifice graphics and the ability to display an object in sync with the terrain. But, turning the table a bit, there are some advantages of not having a camera. Part of the backlash against Google Glass was that the glasses were so conspicuous. It's obvious if somebody's wearing them. There was a visible camera, which might cause some security concerns. Do you want to hang out with somebody wearing glasses containing a camera? Without a camera, these Vaunt smart eyeglasses have few problems in terms of privacy. So devices like Vaunt are obviously getting some buzz. And certainly I wasn't aware of this, but, you know, doing this show and the research and information that I do every week when I talk to you about this fancy-dancy technology, I learn a few things, and certainly a few brain cells are tickled. Anyway, it'll be a year or two before augmented reality glasses make it to the mass market. The inflection point for consumer augmented reality headgear likely will be late 2019 or early 2020. It really requires strong brands and marketing to push these augmented reality glasses to the masses. That rhymes. Apple has such a brand, and it is rumored to have a pair of augmented reality spectacles in the works. Now, when those hit the market, there will be millions of shipments, which has not yet occurred anywhere, among augmented reality devices. The Vaunt smart eyeglasses are not likely to have that sort of impact, but they can be an important bridge between the consumer side disappointment of Google Glass to a more realistic consumer augmented reality market. Brian Blau from Gartner said, Vaunt is a clear sign that wearable display technology is quickly advancing. Vaunt represents a form factor that any technology provider would see as a great next step, as it's one that is not that different from a typical pair of eyeglasses. It'll be some years before smart glasses like Vaunt arrive in consumers' hands, but it's great to see these early prototypes as they get brands and businesses interested in smart glasses, even in this early stage of their development. So smart eyeglasses, smart cars, smartphones, smart homes, and research into smart people's brains. It's kind of stuff that scientists are doing in 2018, and it is quite interesting to say the least. Well, let me know what you think. Would you wear smart glasses? Are you as interested as I am in learning about how the human brain functions and how it relates and complements and has similarities, perhaps, to smart devices and what we call the Internet of Things? Send me an email. I'd always love to hear from you. Adam@WWGH1071.com. I'm not a big Snapchat user. Personally, I think the app is kind of clumsy, and honestly, Facebook chat or just old-fashioned, relatively old-fashioned texting is easier, but I know a lot of people love Snapchat, especially younger users, and bottom line is if you use Snapchat at all, you probably noticed that it's been redesigned, and judged on comments that I'm seeing on social media, most people are less than thrilled by this redesign. The goal was to make it easier to use, and as often happens with updates and adjustments or so-called enhancements or upgrades to technology, it kind of worked the other way. Less easy to use, and people preferred what they had prior to this change. Snapchat. That's one of the problems with Snapchat. It's hard to say. Facebook and texting are easier, but that's okay. I'll just have the intern make some more coffee. Anyway, Snapchat is getting criticism that the new interface is difficult to navigate. Ashley Vasquez, a 21-year-old Snapchatter, A senior at University of Maryland in College Park said, I might start using Instagram stories now. Of course, Instagram being owned by Facebook. A Change.org petition asking the company to remove the new update has amassed more than 590,000, more than 500,000 signatures. And that was by February 12th. So people definitely are less than thrilled by this. Other users began sharing a workaround for reversing the update by deleting the app and turning off automatic updates before downloading it again. But Snapchat advises against doing that. Back in November of 2017, Snapchat said they were working on a major redesign of their app to attract new users. Evan Spiegel, their CEO and founder, has acknowledged in the past that Snapchat can be hard to understand. Now, it's popular with people in their teens and 20s. It previously featured content from friends, publishers, and celebrities on one page. Now, there's a designated page for publishers and a page for friends. Now, this redesigned app was rolled out to 40 million users as of early February, and all of the users will have it by the end of March. Snapchat has almost 200 million daily active users. It would not disclose its total user base. Snapchat stories, which are photos and videos shared by users that disappear after 24 hours, are now mixed in with different direct messages and individual snaps. Users whom you've interacted with recently appear higher on the screen rather than a list of recent stories. In response to the backlash, a Snap spokesperson said, "Updates as big as this one can take a little getting used to, but we hope the community will enjoy it once they settle in." In the past, social media users have been resistant to change. Back in 2008, back in the infancy of Facebook, they drastically redesigned their site, and that got criticism. Groups formed on the platform, such as Petition Against the New Facebook and A Million Against the New Facebook Layout, and each one had over 1 million members. But Facebook did not change the design back. Now, some analysts believe Snapchat's update could turn off the app's key user base of teens and adults in their 20s. Jessica Liu from the research firm Forrester said, "Snap's new product strategy and redesign runs counter to why Snapchat was appealing to its younger demographic in the first place. And it could alienate that existing user base because they're now trying to cater to the masses and Wall Street." Others argue that the update was necessary to expand Snapchat's user base. Daniel Ives from GBH Insights said, "This was a much-needed redesign for Snap as the complexity and nature of the app was shunning older demographics and a major issue for advertisers, which remained the golden goose for the company." He said the update comes at the right time as Snap looks to boost its engagement and advertising growth. The almighty dollar, thinking they can get more ads, and I think Facebook does some of the same things. Now, back in early February, Snapchat reported quarterly sales and user growth that was higher than Wall Street's expectations. So, this controversial Snapchat update, are you a Snapchatter? Again, I don't use it that often. I really don't like it, but some of my younger friends like to communicate with it, so why not? I do have it, but again, I wouldn't exactly say I'm the biggest fan, and I haven't looked at this update enough to make a decision, but sometimes it's best to leave well enough alone. Although, conversely, the almighty dollar could often be the ruling factor. Yeah. Adam Lepp here, the Computer Guy. Thanks for listening to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. News and views and, of course, sufficient wisecracks from yours truly on the Talking Place, WGH Radio. Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and Chase, three very large companies. They are banding together, and you might ask, well, why are they doing that? Well, it is to provide health care for their 1.1 million employees. They plan to form a company, quote, free from profit-making incentives and constraints, in order to improve employee satisfaction with their health care coverage as well as reduce costs. This company initially will focus on technology solutions that provide U.S. employees and their families with simplified, high-quality, and transparent health care at a reasonable cost. Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett said, "The ballooning costs of health care act as a hungry tapeworm on the American economy. Our group does not come to this problem with answers, but we also do not accept it as inevitable. Rather, we share the belief that putting our collective resources behind the country's best talent can, in time, check the rise in health costs while concurrently enhancing patient satisfaction and outcomes." According to Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, the companies are keenly aware of the difficulties in front of them. "Hard as it might be," he said, "reducing healthcare's burden on the economy while improving outcomes for employees and their families would be worth the effort. Success is going to require talented experts, a beginner's mind, and a long-term orientation." Now, the healthcare initiative, again, set up by Berkshire Hathaway, Amazon, and JP Morgan Chase, could reach beyond their employees, according to JP Morgan Chairman Jamie Dimon. "The three of our companies have extraordinary resources, and our goal is to create solutions that benefit our U.S. employees, their families, and potentially all Americans." Now, still in the beginning stages, the healthcare initiative will be led by Todd Combs, an investment officer of Berkshire Hathaway, Marvell Sullivan Birch Told, a managing director of Chase, and Beth Galletti, a senior VP at Amazon. Now, the details are just in the beginning stages. They really have not been finalized yet. But this initiative has the potential to disrupt the healthcare industry. Charles King is from Pundit. We quote him often, and he's a pretty smart dude. He said, "Since the three together have over a million employees, potential solutions could range from simply leveraging those numbers to gain for favorable rates from HMOs to more aggressive moves like creating their own network of caregivers. Right now," he said, "everything's on the table." Patty Padmanabhan from Damo Consulting said, "If the new entity does throw the weight of its employee base around, it could hurt the balance sheets of those in the market. The new company will likely be a big buyer of healthcare products and services with pricing leverage that can hurt the profit margins of existing healthcare players." Now, Amazon's technology prowess also could change the market for existing players. That comes to mind when you say, well, what does this have to do with technology? Well, quite a bit when Amazon is one of those three companies. Anyway, we quoted Patty Padmanabhan earlier, and he said it's clear that healthcare consumerism is on the rise, and there's a need for better user experiences. Now, with Amazon, a revolutionary company in many ways, but of course they're known for their intuitive customer interfaces, use of advanced analytics, and negotiating power with suppliers in the e-commerce space. They'll likely use these skills to disrupt the markets for healthcare products and services. One motive driving these companies is the desire to make employees healthier. That comes from Jack Gold, principal analyst at J. Gold Associates. He said what they're trying to do here is establish a program that lowers cost by making people healthier and using technology to do that. If we can make people healthier, insurance costs should go down because they won't be in doctors' offices so often. Michael Cannon is from the Cato Institute. He says while the Amazon and Friends venture could disrupt the healthcare market and increase competition, it still won't address the fundamental problems with the industry. Healthcare needs more than competition. It needs reform. It's going to be hard for Amazon and the others to have a transformative impact on healthcare because they're fighting perverse incentives baked into federal law. Without reforming those perverse incentives, there is very little good that entrepreneurs can do. He said those perverse incentives are due to the fact that everyone is spending someone else's money, so there's no incentive to control costs. He said if Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and J.P. Morgan Chase were to succeed despite the challenging circumstances, their 1.1 million employees could benefit. But I don't think it can benefit other consumers in the healthcare system without fundamental reform. So, novel idea, healthcare collaboration, keep costs down and make the experience better for their employees. 1.1 million total between Berkshire Hathaway, Chase, and Amazon. Interesting concept. I kind of like the idea. Let's see what materializes. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy with my twice weekly radio show here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. If you're like me, you enjoy a beer every now and then. And I remind you, please don't drink a beer and then drive a vehicle, because that's just plain stupid. Drink a beer at a drinking establishment or at home. If you need to go somewhere, call an Uber or a Lyft or a taxi. Get a sober friend, or if it's not far, get some exercise and walk. So again, nothing wrong with drinking a beer or two, and I certainly enjoy that, but want to mention that doesn't necessarily go well with driving a vehicle. But beer is an interesting beverage, and with my chemistry background, I've always been interested in the way they make beer and flavor beer and make different kinds, different alcohol content, and Anheuser-Busch and Bud Light and Budweiser have a big presence here in Ohio with a big plant in the north side of Columbus. Of course, a lot of craft beers are made in Ohio. Columbus, Cincinnati, Akron have many microbreweries, and it's a good business, I think. Again, just don't mix it with driving, and beer is an interesting beverage, to say the least, and in many ways you are supporting the local and regional economy by enjoying some suds every now and then. Anyway, speaking of Anheuser-Busch, SpaceX is sending barley seeds on a round-trip mission to space, trying to produce a better beer. And some major coolness for Anheuser-Busch. It's part of a research project backed by Budweiser, which says it wants to develop the first beer that people in space can drink on Mars. Talk about drinking beer far away from where you live. Now, this launch was slated for liftoff from Cape Canaveral's Air Force Station. However, it was delayed. SpaceX said that it's been delayed to allow time for additional checks. It's part of SpaceX's ongoing partnership with NASA to complete unmanned trips to the International Space Station. Each trip sends supplies for the crew and scientific experiments. Six people are currently on board the space station: three NASA astronauts, two Russian cosmonauts, and one Italian astronaut. So Budweiser's plan to brew space beer may sound a bit like a gimmick. And again, there's certainly gimmicks in the alcoholic beverage industry, but is this something that's a little more serious? The funding for the project is coming out of Budweiser's marketing budget, according to Ricardo Marcus, their vice president in charge of marketing. But he wouldn't say how much it cost. He said space travel is becoming a trending hot topic. And he didn't shy away from conceding that that's part of what draws marketers in. But he said there's a lot of scientific horsepower behind this experiment. Mike Roberts is the deputy chief scientist at CASIS, C-A-S-I-S, which manages the Space Station's United States Research Lab. His team helps decide which cargo is worthy of making the risky and expensive trek to space. He said that the Barley experiment will add to a series of projects that the space station has hosted, all aimed at learning more about crops and how to grow them better back here on Earth. With global warming and other things coming our way, there's drastic changes for our access to nutrients. Now, the barley seeds that will be flying shortly will stay on the space station for about 1 month before they're sent home to be analyzed. The goal is to study how they react to the microgravity environment in space. It'll give scientists a better understanding of barley's plant biology, lending some potentially valuable information about growing healthy crops on Earth. It'll mark the first time barley seeds have been the focus of a space station experiment. Budweiser said this will be the first of many excursions that it plans to back. And eventually, the newly discovered information could inform how the company will make brews for Mars. Because again, even on Mars, you can enjoy a beer. Why not? They pledged to make the first beer on Mars at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas, earlier in 2017. They said they want to be known for being bold, pushing the boundaries. Well, I would say brewing beer on Mars, that's pretty bold. We're looking to simply learn more, explore our agenda. It's great that we can connect with the passion of our drinker. And we've been watching Star Trek for years. Interesting news that you get here on The Talking Place. WWGH Radio, the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Thanks for listening.